With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, welcome to the Curator Podcast. This is episode 35. Hi, hello, welcome once again, dear listener, to the Curator Podcast. I am your host, Mark Fraser, and this is episode number 35. A little bit late again this episode, I do apologise profusely for that. A lot of interviews seem to be coming through on Thursdays at the moment, which is a bit of a bummer, really, because this podcast is supposed to go out on Thursday. But I guess that probably says more about my preparedness for booking interviews as opposed to the day on which they fall. I should probably have some interviews in the tank ready to go as opposed to just doing one on the day of the podcast. But, you know, I'm not perfect. And you guys know that, hopefully. So, yeah, I will hopefully be back to a regular schedule. Well, not a regular schedule, but hopefully go back to Thursdays as of the following episode. But I don't know. It's okay. I think it's all right. And I mean, if you guys don't like this, if you guys are feeling like... if it annoys you that it's late, then please let me know. It does annoy me when podcasts I like are late, but I'm a weirdo, so, I mean, you guys might be okay with it, or you might not. Either way, I'd like to know. On this episode, I have an interview, a really great interview, with one of my favourite songwriters right now, is Alison Weiss. Now, Alison is such a cool person, man. Like, I always get a bit weird going on interviews because... I don't know, you get nervous, you know what I mean? And that goes the same for everyone when I talk to them. I still get nervous, I guess that's a good sign. But Alison was just really accommodating and she was super fun to chat to and I really enjoyed talking to her. So hopefully that comes across in the interview and it's not too awkward or anything like that for you because, hey, I enjoyed it. I also enjoyed being back in the King Tut's green room. I haven't been in there for a long, long time and it's just as small as I remember. But, it's not a bad thing. It was pretty cool, actually. So I'm going to dive right into this. There's a bit of a weird noise in the background, which I tried to erase, but I couldn't. I think it's like an air conditioner or something like that. So if you hear that, I guess just deal with it. It's not that invasive, but it's cool. Once again, I didn't use my handheld mic. I just kind of used the mic on the recorder. So it gives it a much more conversational flow, which I like. There's something really restricting about having to shove a microphone in someone's face whenever you ask them a question. So it's good to not do that sometimes. And... yeah, I think it makes the interview, the quality of the interview, much better. I also apologise for having a slightly scratchy throat. I was recording some vocals with my band over the weekend there and I think I've damaged it in some way. Hopefully it's not permanent, but I don't know, man. If it is, then that's some bad crack. Anyway, I'm going to open up this interview now with one of my favourite songs by Alison. It's called Wait For Me. It's from her album Say What You Mean and I hope you enjoy it.
Feel so alive. I'm packing my suitcase and changing my mind. I forgot what it's like to look the things you want right between the eyes. It's never been so hard to say goodbye. I'm back to the basics and waiting for signs. Pray for patience, falling behind. It's not the way I'm meant to be, it's just how I'm designed. I get so tired of running out of time. I'm missing out on all the places I could go, the people I could know, the nights so not alone. We'll never make it in, it wasn't meant to be, but I met my demands. I told myself the day I left I want it, but I can't. I fell for something far away again. I guess that it's pointless, but I mean what I say. I never expected through all this time that I could be okay. Yeah, all the things you do to me, the promise and the pain. I wish with all my heart that I could stay. I'm missing out on all the places I could go, the people I could know, the nights I'm not alone. We'll never make it end, it wasn't meant to be, but I'll wait if you'll wait for me. I forgot what it felt like to feel so alive. I'm packing my suitcase, changing my mind. I forgot what it's like to look the things you want right between the eyes. Say goodbye, 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 goodbye. I'm missing out on all the places I could go, the people I could know, the nights I'm not alone. We'll never make it. Wasn't meant to be, but I'll wait if you'll wait for me. Yeah, I'll wait if you'll wait for me.
Alison, we're here in King Tut's. How are you doing?
Doing great.
I guess the question that everybody starts off with is, how's the tour been so far? It's a total bullshit question, but I might as well start there.
I know. Well, it's day three, and so far we're having a blast. All the shows have been great, all two of them. You know, it's always a short run when we come over here because the country is really small, but we kind of love it because touring in the U.S., you're used to driving like 4 or 5 hours at least every day, or sometimes pulling like a 10-hour drive before a show. So over here, it's really nice to just have like an hour or two between every city.
Until you go to Europe, then it's the same.
Yeah, then it's awful.
It's like 10-hour drives, yeah.
Yeah, but this one's just a U.K. tour.
It's going to, I think, I've done the UK tour myself before, and it's all right. I'd love to go to America, though, I think.
Oh, yeah.
That'd be great. But I've seen a thing recently about how like, a visa for a band costs, like something crazy, like $20,000.
Holy shit.
From here to go over there.
I heard it's really hard to go into the States.
Yeah.
And that's such a bummer. Because for us, it's just, you know, our visas come with the contracts for the shows, so yeah. It still feels really expensive, but it's just plane tickets. But yeah, I heard the U.S. makes it really hard for foreign bands to come in.
I've got a couple of friends that went over and played things like CMJ and all that,
and
Fest, and they just went over with a tourist visa and then like borrowed instruments when they were there.
See, that's dangerous though, because
yeah,
if they find out, they'll like kick you out forever.
Somebody once told me that one of the guys in the border control had actually Googled the guy's name and found out he was on tour. I was like, holy shit, that's like,
yeah,
that's crazy.
Yeah, that's like in the earlier days before I was, you know, doing shows where there was an actual promoter and there was like contracts involved and like music business stuff. When I would go and play Canada, it would always be like, just don't tell them you're playing music and try and cross the border. But then Google happened. And like, when you're like me and your band name is the same as your real name, it's so easy for them to Google and find you and then just like ban you from the country for 5 years, which I've known people who that's happened to.
Wow. So
they're like, I'm just, you know, a tourist who happened to bring my guitar, and then the border agent Googles their name and sees all the tour dates.
So is it the same? So it's the same trying to get out of the U.S. like to Canada, then? Is it the same kind of?
Yeah, Canada. Yeah, you have to have the, you know, the proper paperwork, or they'll turn you back around and ban you from the country.
Man, I like the sound of going to Canada as well. I'd like to go there.
Yeah,
I might need to rethink that.
What?
I might need to rethink that.
Yeah, it's not easy. It's a bummer how not easy it is. I wish there was some sort of like musician visa that was like easier, because you're not really going to work. I mean, you are going to work, but it's not like you're gonna go get a job and work in the country and then
no one's gonna make any money.
Yeah, right.
So one of the things I was doing some research on you, because I like to do research. This,
that's good.
That's what you have to do. And it's kind of daunting, because kind of daunting, I guess, is because you've done a lot of interviews.
Yeah.
So it's really hard to try and find a new angle.
Uh-huh, right?
But what makes it doubly scary, I guess, is that you also do interviews yourself.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Are you talking about the ones where I interviewed my, like, producer and bandmates about the record? Yeah.
Which, I guess it led me to wonder, like, what would be your ideal interview to do, like, yourself?
Ooh. I feel like I would love to interview this soccer player for the U.S. women's team. Her name's Megan Rapinoe.
Oh, yeah.
Football player, sorry. But I just got into football, real football, not American football, through the U.S. women's team, who just won the World Cup. And so a chance to interview any of those players would be cool. Because as a musician, it's like interviewing other musicians, I don't know, it's not as fun, I feel like, as like somebody who's doing something completely different than what I'm doing.
That sounds like it'd be pretty awesome.
Yeah, either that or some, you know, awesome comedian. Like, I have a favorite comedian of mine, his name's Pete Holmes. It'd be cool to interview him.
I don't think I've heard of him.
He's real, real goofy, but really funny.
For me, it'd be Prince.
Oh, yeah.
In a heartbeat, like.
Dude, who doesn't? I wouldn't want to interview Prince because I would be terrified.
Yeah.
I feel like he'd just, like, you'd ask him something, he'd be like, no, just pass. Not a good enough question.
The last thing before he released his new album, he interviewed he asked like 5 press people to come to Paisley Park, and he played the piano and they sat and asked him questions, and you can't record what he's saying, you're not allowed to. And this guy was working for The Guardian here in the UK, and he asked him to go up and sing Sign of the Times. He was like, no. Are you crazy?
Oh my god.
You're Prince. I'm not going to sing next to you.
That's awesome.
It's weird as fuck, man. I was reading some of the interviews you've done recently, because, like I said, there's some research, and this might not be an accurate quote, but I'm going to throw it out there anyway.
Sure.
It says, you said apparently that you like to thrive on productivity.
Yeah.
Is that accurate? Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm the kind of person where if I'm sitting around doing nothing, I'm wondering what I could be doing instead. It's just, I don't know. I like to keep busy.
That's really interesting, because I'm much the same.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you think that comes from?
I don't know. Honestly, I feel like it's maybe nurture or nature. My parents are very similar. My dad's like the kind of guy who's just like always doing stuff and always getting into things. And that said, they know how to party and chill as well as anybody else. But I don't know. I just I like getting things done.
Is that why you do like so many different things, like the graphic design and all that?
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Because that's like almost like a an artistic polymath, I guess.
Yeah.
And just get fingers in so many pies, sort of thing.
Yeah,
know?
Yeah, totally. Well, I felt like I recently moved from Brooklyn to LA, and that was sort of like an effort to teach myself how to just relax and do nothing more. Because there was, you know, I've always been so like involved in so many things, and in Brooklyn it was just like, you know, I do design and music, and I'm just like constantly working, and I feel like it really started to wear me down and started to like take its toll. So now I actively try and like force myself to just take those like do nothing moments, you know.
So I guess as moving made it easier to kind of unwind then.
Yeah, LA has a real chill vibe. New York is very like hustle and bustle and like be out there on the grind, whereas people in LA are just like a little more relaxed about everything.
That sounds like kind of place I would dislike, because I don't like to be too relaxed and turned off. Like,
yeah.
Like, one of the good things about living in Glasgow is there's always something happening, you know?
Yeah.
Cool, it's really cool, you know?
Yeah.
But sometimes, yeah, I think my girlfriend probably wishes I would switch off.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's the thing. I was always, like, on my phone or, like, just, like, it was impossible to turn my brain off and not be, like, thinking about what the next step was. But I think it's really good, at least for me, to, you know, take a second in the morning, even if it's just like 10 minutes to just like have a coffee and look out the window. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Because whenever I'm with my girlfriend, I make a conscious effort to not look at my phone or anything, and just like just try and be chill.
That's a good way to keep your girlfriend.
It's itchy though. Like, I feel itchy,
right?
You know what I mean?
Like, but doesn't that make you nervous that you are so addicted to your phone that you're like
this,
where is it?
So sad.
Yeah, I know, it is sad.
Just staring at screens all day long.
I once read an Onion article that was like, are you familiar with the Onion over here? Yeah,
Love
that
Onion.
Was like, it was like, study shows that human beings spend 8 to 10 hours a day looking at glowing rectangles.
That's definitely true.
Yeah.
I think from the second I wake up, I'm looking at one until I go to bed, like, literally all day.
I just love them calling them glowing rectangles, because it sounds so creepy when it's like, you're just looking at a glowing rectangle.
Yeah, it's almost like invasive. It's like staring back at you as well.
Yeah.
Kind of creepy.
Yeah.
So as someone that is as a songwriter, I find songwriting to be a very intense process. And you've put out quite a lot of stuff over the years. So I'm kind of wondering, when you finish a song or a project, do you still get the same feeling you used to get when you first started?
Oh yeah, definitely. It's like, I don't know. I mean, you say you're a songwriter yourself, so you understand. It's like this inexplicable feeling when you've figured out like the right melody and the right words, and you've like just finished a song, and it's like this neat little package, and you're like, oh yeah, it's like this. I don't know. It's like a cool little creation that you just made, and so it results in like this. It's a very exciting feeling to finish a song, because like sometimes the process of writing a song can be so intense and like painful, whether it be like emotionally or just because you're like, oh god, I want to finish this fucking thing. So when it all like I feel like every time it all falls into place and I finish a song, it feels like something magic happened, like it was out there in the universe and I like pulled it down and put it on a page.
I always feel like it's a fight, like I'm fighting with myself.
Yeah.
I find like I don't know about you, but I actually find songwriting a very like not just exhausting, but like frustrating. Like it winds me up so much. Like I get so angry at the fact that nothing, unlike what you just said, nothing that I ever do, that I've ever written or finished, ever feels like it is finished.
Oh man, so you're like the opposite.
Yeah. So, but the process in the middle seems like it's kind of the same, though.
Yeah, definitely.
You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
It's weird. I don't like doing it, but also have to do it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's it feels like I've got a big chain around my neck. Like,
oh man, you're like one of those what do you call it? Like a suffering artist. You're like, I have no control. I have to write songs.
I think I have too much control, and just, I can't, man.
Yeah.
Just take it away from me. Abandon it.
Yeah.
Get it out of the way. It's gone. Over the years, has that process changed?
I definitely, like, my songwriting when I was younger and on earlier records was much more, like, very, like, fueled by things that were happening in the moment or, like, emotional bursts of energy, which I think that just, like, because of the way life works out, you, like, grow up and you, like, learn to deal with your emotions better, hopefully. And situations change. Like, I'm engaged now, and I write breakup songs just because, like, that's what I love to write songs about. Even though in my daily life, I'm in a totally happy, wonderful relationship. So now, for me, it's less like what's happening to me right now that I need to write about, and more like I like to, you know, look back on my past and things that I have experienced, and, you know, dissect them and try and like come up with new ways to write about the same thing over and over again.
I was once told by a therapist, no less, that the reason that a lot of people keep coming back to those like breakup songs is the emotions are so intense and so easily accessible.
Oh yeah.
You know, even if you're happy, like there's still, for some reason, that even though that wound is closed, it actually feels kind of cathartic to reopen it again and explore.
Absolutely.
Inside it, you know.
Yeah, and it's such a universal emotion, yet at the same time when you're in it you feel like no one else in the world understands what you're feeling. So it's a special time.
It's a special kind of torture.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of torture. Yeah.
Cause I don't know, like, I guess it's a good thing to maybe go into what this podcast is actually about. So the podcast in itself is about creativity and passion, and obviously with a lot of the stuff that you've done, it's your music is quite passionate, as you've just explained, but obviously creativity is a huge part of, like, I speak a little bit about that's, in fact, what I've just said is probably the most I've ever spoken about creativity on my own part.
Oh yeah.
In any interview I've done, because I find it really interesting. I find people's creative processes like infinitely more interesting than anything else, really. But I wonder, like, when did you first realise that you were a creative person?
I have always been doing like artistic things ever since I can remember. I don't know, as soon as I was I was the kid who was always drawing things and making things and, you know, like building things out of clay or whatever. So as a young kid, for me it was all about like visual art and like creating things, and I used to make little movies and stuff like that. It wasn't until high school that I got into music and then found that was like the number one creative outlet for me. But yeah, I feel like I was just born the type of person who wants to make stuff.
What was the discovery of music like when it happened?
Well, I grew up in a very musical household. My dad played and had a lot of instruments around, so I was always, like, aware of it. It was always, like, around me. I played piano when I was a kid because my dad gave me lessons, but it wasn't a thing that I was, like, personally invested in yet. It was just like, yeah, whatever. My dad plays music, and I can play piano, blah, blah, blah. But then when, I got into high school and I started having things that I wanted to say and, like, songs that I wanted to write, I picked up a guitar and started playing myself, and I don't even know how to describe what it was like. It was just like, it was always meant to happen, I guess, you know. It didn't feel forced or anything like that. It was just like, now I play guitar, this is what I do, this is what I'm going to do forever, you know.
It's interesting that, because you grew up in such a musical household, that was the architecture of your life was already kind of, like, obviously instilled in you that knowledge, I guess, mm-hmm. of music, even if it was, like, subliminal,
mm-hmm. you know? Yeah.
It's like, the complete opposite to a lot of other people, I think. A lot of people, they don't really have that, but do you think that makes you different from other songwriters in some ways?
I don't know.
Never really thought about it, no?
Yeah, I've never really thought about it. Because I know people who have come from both sides of the coin. Somebody who's parents were songwriters or their grandparents were, and it's just like been a thing that their family has done, mm-hmm. And I know people who are the only musical member of their family, or, you know, the first one to ever sing a song or have any sort of musical ability, I don't know that it sets me apart too much to be like on the side where I'm from a musical family.
Do you think that being from a musical family is one of the reasons why, like, you're a solo artist?
Why I'm what?
A solo artist.
Maybe. But that probably has more to do with, you know, being OCD as hell and a control freak. And being, I've never been in a band where I wasn't the one who was completely in control. Uh-huh. So it's almost like, I don't know what that says about me, but I like to be the one in charge, I guess.
I think that's cool. There's obviously no right way of doing it, you know? You just do whatever you feel is right.
Yeah.
But I'm the opposite, Although I like to be in control of the businessy aspect of it, just mm-hmm. because I don't trust anyone else to do it.
Yeah.
The musical side is, I can't wait until we're in the room together doing it all at the same time.
Yeah, collaboration is really fun. I just started, like, in the past couple years, writing more songs with friends. Like my friend Jenny Owen Youngs, who's playing tonight as well, she co-wrote a couple songs on my new record. And that's the first time I've ever had any songs on a record that weren't just 100% all me, all mine. And I love it. It's really nice. I feel like collaborating with other songwriters helps me become a better songwriter myself.
What was it like coming into that collaboration process when you first did? Was it kind of nervy, or was it kind of...
It's kind of weird at first. She wasn't the first person I ever co-wrote with, but definitely, like, learning to write with another person is... It's nerve-wracking when you just get into it, because, you know, you... For 25 years of my life, writing music was this, like, really personal thing, and I wouldn't share it with anybody until I was, like, confident that it was done and ready to be heard. But, like, being in a room with somebody else and bouncing ideas off of each other, you sort of have to just, like, get over all that stuff, get over the ego of it, and, like, not be afraid to say something stupid. And that's, like, sort of the way I look at it when I go into it. And, you know, whenever I'm writing with somebody, I'll say that at the beginning. I'm like, just so you know, I have, like, a policy where you have to say everything even if you think it's dumb, because, like, my shitty idea for a lyric might make you think of the perfect idea for a lyric, and that's what collaboration's all about.
Yeah.
So I think it's just like, say everything and anything and any idea, and let's get all the dumb ideas out and come up with which one is the best.
You have a saying in one of the bands I'm in, we have the saying that song is king. It's whatever serves the music.
Song is king?
The song is king.
Yeah, absolutely. Whatever's best for the song. That I feel that way too. It's like, it's all about whatever's best for the song, whether you're talking about the lyrics or the melody or the way it's going to be produced. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or the arrangement, I guess, is
totally.
One of the most important parts of it. I've just asked that question, I'll move on to the next one. So Side One Dummy, man.
Yeah.
That's cute as fuck. I love that label.
I love them. They're so great. They're so, so supportive and just excited about everything. And it's like, I feel like not everybody can say that their label rules so hard. Like, most people, I think, have gripes about the record labels that they're on. But I just love Side One. They're just, it's like, I don't know. They just get me. They just understand what I want to do, and they're down, and, like, I could call them up at, like, 3 in the morning and be like, I have a crazy idea, and then the next day they'd be like, let's do this, you know? So it's really, really fun to be on the label.
That's really ace to have that support as an artist.
Yeah, it's so great. It's so beats, you know, yeah, you could be on a major label and have huge budgets, but, like, I would much rather be on, like, a label like Side One where, you know, they're, like, a bigger... They're bigger in the punk scene, but they still operate like a DIY indie label, you know? Yeah, they have an office in Hollywood and, like, a staff and all that sort of stuff, but, like, I don't know. They feel like a little punk label even though they're bigger.
Was that a no-brainer then when they came calling? Was it like, yes, straight away?
Yeah, totally. They had been... We had been, like, pals ever since the previous record came out, See What You Mean? And the publicist at Side One, her name's Jamie Coletta, she's always been, like, such a champion of my songs, and, you know, she's always putting them on mixtapes and telling people about them, even though I wasn't even on that label. And so then when I was looking for a new label, they were immediately, like, hands in the air, like, we'd like to put it out, we'd like to put it out. And, yeah, it was just, I was like, duh.
So I guess you are a full-time musician, that's what you do. Mm-hmm. Going on a label like Side One Dummy, is that in your mind, does that qualify as success?
Yeah, I mean, I think being able to pay my rent by doing what I love qualifies as success, which I can pretty much do. So, yeah, I think that everybody's got, you know, different levels of, like, what is the thing that is successful. But I totally feel successful, you know? I feel like I'm in fucking... Scotland right now, getting ready to play a show that's probably gonna have a good amount of people at it. Like, how crazy is that? That, like, I can come over here and play shows, and, like, people from a whole other country, a whole other part of the world are singing my songs back at me. Like, that's incredible. That's just, like, an incomparable feeling.
When you first started out, did you ever imagine this was gonna happen? You'd be sitting here talking to an idiot like me.
I dreamed about it, but I didn't, you know. You never know. When you're a kid, you're just like, you see, because I, you know, I went to a lot of shows when I was younger, and the bands that I would see were like gods on stage, and I was like, oh, this is so crazy, how do they do this? And now I'm like in that world, and I'm like, oh man, they were just, you know, kids in their 20s like I am now. This is so nuts. I can't believe that I'm here doing the thing that I used to, like, look up to and freak out about it as a kid.
Can you remember the moment when you realized you'd become one of those people?
I think, you know, it may have been when I started working with my manager, Joe Morrow, who plays guitar in the band The Early November, and that was sort of like a full circle thing for me, because when I was 16 or 17 and just, like, playing music for fun in college, I got to open for them at a college show, and I was so excited about it because they were a band that I listened to as a kid and, like, would see as a kid, and I was like, oh, I can't believe I get to open for The Early November. And then cut to, like, 5 years later, and now he's managing me, and, like, I'm, like, you know, friends with bands that I used to look up to and go to their shows. And I guess that's when I sort of was like, oh shit, this is when my last record came out, Say What You Mean, and I was suddenly, like, in that AP scene, you know? When I used to go to the bookstore and pick up AP Magazine and read about all my favorite bands, and then suddenly I was in AP Magazine. I was, like, one of the 100 bands to watch, and I was like, oh, this is awesome.
I'm here. I've arrived.
Yeah, right?
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I love hearing that kind of thing, man, because a lot of bands, it's never a process, it's never, like, a defining line. It's always, like, you kind of, one day you think about something, you're like, oh, holy shit, I'm here now, like,
yeah.
When did that happen?
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Yeah, it's cool, man. Like, hopefully that'll happen one day.
Yeah.
So the new album is awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah, I was getting some Cure vibes from it.
Yeah.
Is that?
That feels good. That, I like that.
Yeah, so that was... I didn't know that was going to be in there, because sometimes, like, you can say to someone, this is about this, and they go, no.
No, yeah, definitely. I love The Cure, definitely, for sure. And that whole sort of, like, era of, like, new wave 80s stuff. And I've always wanted to incorporate more of that as well as, like, current pop styles into my own music. And so that's what I did on New Love.
Yeah, I wasn't really expecting it, to be honest. But when I heard it, I was like, man, that's really cool.
I'm glad that you liked it. Because there's been a couple here and there who are like, oh, you know, I miss the acoustic stuff. But, like, I love playing these songs. This is my favorite record I've made. And who knows what the next one will be like. Yeah. But for now, this is what I'm doing, and I love it.
Evolution's obviously important to an artist.
Yeah, definitely.
And I guess, do you ever think about the times, or are there any songs you don't play anymore because you feel as though they just don't represent who you are as an artist anymore?
Yeah, definitely. There's some older songs on, like, my first couple EPs and records that just, it to me feels like a whole different person wrote those songs, and it's a bummer when people really want to hear those. I need to figure out some way to play them so that they still sound like me. Like, a band I love called Tegan and Sarah, they have...
Everyone knows Tegan and Sarah.
Yeah, everyone knows Tegan and Sarah. They have a discography that is like that, where, like, their really early records sound like a completely different band than their most recent record, but their fans love the early stuff so much that they can't not play it. So they're really good at, I feel like, sort of updating their older songs to fit within the realm of the newer songs. So that's something I aspire to do for sure.
Thinking about that, is that something that scares you, thinking about you may have to do that?
No, because, I mean, even though the older songs feel like they're written by a different person, they're still me and I still like them. It's just like, it's more like a genre thing and an arrangement thing where I'm like, oh, if I did that today, I would have done something different with it, you know? So it's almost like covering yourself, you know what I mean?
Yeah. It kind of goes back to, it's like you were talking about, like when you used to look at bands like Yellow November and they were like your idols. I think that's what it comes back to for people as well. It's like, I really want you to play that song because I think a lot of the times people don't see their favourite artists as being human. They see them as almost like something more.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely.
And I guess that's why a lot of people like I like it when artists evolve. I enjoy going on that journey with them. And I do find it a bit odd that some artists can get away with it, some can't, like obviously Bowie could. But like there's a lot of artists, like particularly punk bands, that like if you change your sound they're like, well, no.
Yeah.
Sellouts, you've lost fans, like
it's a bummer.
Yeah, it's just does that ever play into anything that you do when you think about writing music?
It hasn't yet, so that's good.
That's good, yeah. That's the best way to be.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So, one of the things I wanted to mention, because it was an interview that I read a while ago, I think it was from a while ago now, but we should probably talk about marriage equality in America.
Talk about what?
Marriage equality in America.
Oh, marriage equality.
Yeah, because that's mind-blowing to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's like, we don't have that here. Like,
you
we
don't
we
have
do
it
have
here?
It here, but it's not an issue.
Oh, you mean marriage equality has always been?
Yeah, well, it's not always been, but...
But it was passed a long time ago. It's been legal here for much longer than it has been in the United States.
When they decided it had to happen, it happened.
Yeah, it wasn't like a whole giant issue.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm so glad that is over with, at least from a legal standpoint. Mm. Of course, it's like, now we've entered the part of it where probably for like the next 5 or 10 years, every time somebody has a problem with it, they're going to try and get the law overturned, like the same way they are with abortion in America. You know, it's been legal since the 70s or 80s or something like that, but people are always trying to reverse it.
The abortion thing as well, that's just scary to me. Like, I just don't understand why anybody would be against it, really, you know?
I know.
It's a woman's choice, like...
I know. It's so obvious to us, but to the other side, they feel like their opinion is the obvious choice, and that's where it's just like,
how can it not be awful? Like, I can't wrap my head around it.
I know.
You know?
Same here.
But does that play in your mind a lot? Like, that they kind of issue with marriage equality and stuff like that in America. The acceptance of it, I guess.
What do you mean?
Like the acceptance of it from, because there's obviously still a lot of people that are opposed to it because of whatever bullshit views they hold, you know?
Yeah.
Is that something that... Is that a reality you have to confront on a daily basis?
I think because I live in California, which is a pretty liberal state, it's not something that I really... Because, you know, California has... It was legal there for a while, and then they overturned it, and that's when the whole thing started up again. But... You know, it's only really when I'm on tour and I go to, like, the middle of the country where I'm, like, a little more nervous about holding my fiancé's hand in a random gas station in Virginia or something like that. But I'm always, you know, on the internet very outspoken about my views, and
that's why I asked.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess, yeah, I guess it does affect my day-to-day life in that way, because I feel like being like a quote-unquote public figure, I have like a sounding board and there's people who are listening, and I feel like it's my responsibility to use that to spread awareness and help the kids who are like me that maybe don't have the luxury of coming out because they live in that small town in Virginia or whatever.
It's absolutely, I think it's absolutely required that people that have got, you know, public, I guess, knowledge, people know who they are.
Yeah.
They do take stands on things like that, because without them, then we're just going to go backwards.
Yeah, exactly.
And really, in parts of America, it's already quite backwards, it would seem.
Oh, it's so backwards in some parts.
But this kind of feeds into another question. I've had a little bit of trouble over the past. This podcast has been going since June last year, and it's been really difficult for me to get women to come on the podcast.
Oh yeah.
At the start it was. It's now easier now that I've had some women on.
Yeah.
But a lot of the things a knowledge that I have is that, well, I think it's probably quite right for a lot of women to be wary of talking to journalists, because there's been a lot of stuff coming out recently about guys being quite misogynistic, you know.
Oh, yeah.
As music journalists, particularly in America, it would seem.
Yeah.
And it makes me really sad that sexism is still a huge thing in the music industry when it's supposed to be a liberal place.
I know.
You know? Which has just made me go off on a weird tangent in my head there, which I'm going to mention. But speaking of being liberal, the whole thing where the Eagles of Death Metal singer talking about guns, did you see that?
No, I didn't see that.
They played Paris recently again.
Oh, wow.
And he then gave an interview saying everybody needs to have guns.
Everybody needs to have guns?
After that, everybody needs to have guns. And I'm like, man, come on, like, do you not understand that's why we've got to this situation in the first place, man.
That's awful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But nobody really understands, but being in the music industry, I guess those things are kind of, those issues are more apparent than they are in real life. Do you know what I mean?
You mean like the sexism issues?
Yeah, yeah.
It's definitely a thing. Well, for journalists, I feel like
I think it's right to be wary, because like it's a thing. It's a big thing. Like, girls and bands still come up against sexism on a daily basis.
Yeah, it's just women get written about in a different way than guys get written about. You know, whether it's something simple as being called a songstress rather than a songwriter, or you know, something where you like I love Taylor Swift talks about how people give her so much shit for writing breakup songs. They're like, oh, she's just a girl writing breakup songs. And there's Taylor Swift with all her breakup songs again. But every guy everywhere writes breakup songs. Yeah. And no one gives John Mayer or Ed Sheeran shit about writing like their breakup songs. But when Taylor Swift does it, everyone's like, oh, another breakup song from Taylor Swift. Like, why aren't people questioning the dudes and saying, who's this about? Who's that about? So, yeah, it can definitely be frustrating, because it's like, and people think of it as like a talking point too, like, ooh, a girl musician. It's crazy, a girl musician.
I can't believe those girl musicians, man. Like, when did that happen?
I know, right? And I know that, Lauren, I think her name is, from Churches, who's from here, she's very outspoken on the internet about sexism in the industry, because I know she experiences a lot of it, because she's a bigger band, and the bigger you are, the more trolls you have on the internet, and especially because, you know, I feel like too, when you're more feminine and you like, when you're an attractive girl, you like can't, like, no one takes you seriously, and it sucks.
I don't know if you know, but she was responsible for setting up a feminist musical arts collective in Glasgow called TYCI.
Cool.
She started up when she was in university before Churches. And they're...
I knew about that. Yeah. She's always been involved in the punk scene.
Yeah, yeah.
And Churches is just like this awesome, fun electronica project.
Yeah, I mean, it's great to see that kind of thing. I was actually at a charity event, and there was a sort of YWCA stand there. I was talking to them about it, and they were all wearing t-shirts they're all about, like, not just empowering young women, but like sort of dealing with the issues that they come up to on a daily basis, and also trying to get them into work and a house and all that, if they're facing, you know, issues with that kind of thing. And they were all wearing different t-shirts which said, like, quotes in the back, like, all they ever asked me is, like, when are you going to get a boyfriend?
Oh my God.
Stuff like that. And, you know, and when I just seen that at the back of that t-shirt, even though, like, obviously, like, I came from a single parent family, so like I've seen it a bit of it, like, from a governmental level as well, you know.
Yeah.
And just seeing that, I just kind of have, I think that was probably the whole point. It hammers home the point, is like, it's still such a, like, even though it doesn't really affect my life so much because I've always treated everybody equal because that's mm-hmm. the way I was brought up, but it's still such a big thing. And
yeah.
It blows my mind every single time I come across it. I'm like, well, how can you hold such draconian views? You know, it's scary. And then, especially in the music industry as well. Like,
yeah.
It blows my mind. I can't get it.
I mean, I've had friends who were on, you know, women who are on tour with other bands full of guys where the guys will, like, just, you know, call them, like, sweetie and honey all the time. Or, like, I had somebody who even said a guy in the other band, like, smacked her butt while she was walking by. And she turns around and she's like, don't ever do that again. And his response is something like, whoa, calm down, honey. You know, and it's just, like, the fact that that is still happening is insane to me. And, you know, I feel like I've not experienced that sort of thing. Maybe it's because I'm, like, a more androgynous presenting, you know, gay woman, but, you know, not, you, it's, you can't tell girls to not, you know, wear what they want to wear. Like, I, like, the whole thing where, especially in America, rape culture, where it's like, well, she shouldn't have been wearing that short skirt, or she shouldn't have been out late at night, rather than saying, hey guys, don't rape people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I love, there's, somebody made something where, because there's always, like, when you grow up as a woman, you're always being told, like, make sure you don't, like, how to prevent rape. Don't go out late at night by yourself. Don't wear skimpy clothing in public. Always keep an eye on your drink, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Somebody made, like, a mock one of those, where it was, like, how to prevent rape. And it just said, if you see a woman out on the street, don't rape her. If you see a woman drunk in a bar, don't rape her. If, you know, so I just think that's really funny, because it's like women are always taught to, like, be on guard against predators, when really it's
predatory,
know,
culture as opposed to,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I suppose that's the best way to put it. Like,
yeah.
I can't, there's nothing else I can really add to that. It's,
yeah.
it's one of those things. Like, it just, to think that if I had a daughter, like, I would have to, like, she'd have to come across, she'd have to come up against something like that in this modern world.
You, yeah,
know what I mean? Like, that's, to me, that's one of the most terrifying things I could ever imagine.
Yeah.
You know? And,
But, you know, as a dad who, like, understands feminism, and that whole concept, I feel like if you had a daughter, she would grow up with, you know, the tools that she needed to understand that those things aren't okay. Because there are so many women, too, who don't understand it. And, you know, there's this whole ridiculous movement on the internet that's like, I don't need feminism.
Yeah, I've seen that, yeah.
And it's like those women are a victim of the culture because they're just accepting it. You know, it's like they're, like, just ignorant to what's happening all,
yeah,
around them. And that's
sad. The irony is, of course, like, if it wasn't for feminism, you wouldn't be able to say.
Yeah, right?
Like,
come on.
Can you not see,
you don't need feminism?
Can you not see this
here? Feminism is, yeah, like, why you can do simple things like wear pants and not a dress.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or, like, go to school and have a job and, you know, do something besides work for your husband.
Yeah. Is there anything else you want to say or anything you want to ask me before we finish?
Gosh, we've covered so many things.
We have?
Yeah.
Just trying to make it not boring.
It's not boring. We had the fun and then we had, like, the intense, serious political part,
yeah,
at the end. But, you know, we're like sitting here, each of us preaching to the choir.
Yeah, well, hopefully the choir are listening.
Yeah, let's hope.
Well, Alison, it's been a total pleasure. Thank you very much for talking.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home.
To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
That was a really good interview. I had so much fun talking to her. She's just a super intelligent and very, very cool, relaxed person, and that's good. You want to hear that? I mean, that makes conversation much easier, you know, when someone's relaxed in an interview. Sometimes you go in an interview and people can be a little bit guarded, but Alison was pretty cool, so yeah, enjoyed that. I hope you enjoyed it too. I get a bit wary about talking about feminism because it's really difficult for me to understand what it's like to experience life as a woman. The trials and all this stuff that they have to go through and all the stuff that they have went through, you know, and come up against sexism on a daily basis. I mean, I see it. I don't know how I'd deal with that if I was a woman. So when I talk about it, I feel a little bit awkward. Like, I kind of feel as though it's not my place to talk about it. But on the other hand, I feel as though it's important to talk about it because it's something I passionately believe in. I passionately believe in equality. That was the way I was brought up. My mum brought me up to believe that everyone was equal and everyone deserves the same thing, you know, and deserves the same chance in life. And I've always believed that. Yet, whenever I talk to a woman about feminism, even my girlfriend, I find it really difficult because I feel as though I'm an imposter almost. Does that make sense? I hope it does. So I hope when I spoke about that towards the end of this interview, it wasn't too awkward. Maybe I'm just overthinking it. I don't know. It's possible. Anyway, thanks to Alison for talking to me. Thanks to Summers for sorting that out for me too. Going to play you out now with another Alison Weiss track from our new album, which is called New Love. If you get a second, please rate and review the podcast on iTunes. We'd really appreciate that. Feel free to hit me up on Twitter. That's the Curator Pod, or, you know, whatever. Let's have a chat. I love talking to people. It's awesome. And if you could share this podcast with your friends, then please do. If you enjoyed it, please share it. So yeah, I'm going to play you out now. Like I said, one more song. This song is from her album New Love, and it's called The Same. It's the last track on it. I think it's a total banger. So yeah, enjoy it. Until next time, bye bye.
Is anybody never really over anyone? Is anybody lying when they say they're having fun? Does anybody feel like checking out and going home? I can't be alone. This bad? Does anybody wish that they could change the way they are? It can't be that hard. It can't be that hard. Feelings.
even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.